Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday afternoon. An article in Scientific American caught our attention. Can fear be erased? Hormone and gene therapies for anxiety and PTSD could be on the way. And the article mentions the work of our guest this hour, Raul Andero Galli. He's a postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center, Emory University. His research is focused on animal models of post-traumatic stress disorder and emotional learning. The article looked at two studies, one looking at a hormone, oxytocin, often called our love hormone, which may be an important thing to administer when we first have traumatic kinds of events happen to keep PTSD from developing. And our guest this hour has been looking at the gene encoding for a compound called brain deviant neurotrophic factor. It's a specific BDNF gene variant that's associated with shy mice, he says, and the carriers are literal wallflowers in humans with the same BDNF mutation. There can be many problems with anxiety and fear, and so our guest has been looking at that as well. We're welcoming your phone calls. And here is how you can reach us during the course of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Raul, thank you very much for being with us. Good afternoon to you.
Hello, Kathleen. I'm very happy to be with you in your show.
Thank you. Let's start with just the whole areas of fear and post-traumatic stress disorder. Can you identify what it is that causes fear? And it might some things in life are so awful that they get lodged in your brain and you become fearful legitimately. Other fears may not be ones that seem to be legitimate fears, but they're caused for a variety of reasons. Concentrating on PTSD, can you describe what it is and why the fear stays with us for so long?
Yeah, post-traumatic stress disorder is an anxiety disorder that occurs in some patients that have been exposed to traumatic stress events like combat or a car accident. And most of the people, after being exposed to these highly stressful situations, after some weeks or months, they recover and they can come back to their daily life. However, a small percentage of people cannot recover from this traumatic event and still has fear of the situations related to the trauma, and also they can develop fear to new situations that are not unsafe. So they also have fear in safe environments. And why this is happening? Well, there are very different things that are happening here. For example, something important is the genetics. There are genetic factors are around 30 to 40% in psychiatric diseases, and the genetics that a person has, so it can influence the development of PTSD or not. Also, the environment that this person is living, it has support or not, and there are many things that are important here. And in the one of the focus of many researchers as me is how can we find treatments to prevent post-traumatic stress disorder and treat it once it's present and debilitating.
Yes, it is for so many. In the article, the aforementioned article in Scientific American, we'll get to your research in a moment. It started, though, with research I'm sure you're very familiar with, University of Bonn psychologist Monica Eckstein. Looking at the administration of a hormone into the noses of 62 men in hopes that their fear would go away. And the article says, for the most part, it did. The hormone was oxytocin. What is that?
Yeah, oxytocin is a hormone produced in the brain, and that is related to social recognition, also to anxiety. It has been related also to cognition. And what these authors have shown is that oxytocin enhances fear extinction. What is fear extinction? So fear extinction is a new learning that something fearful, it's not. Why is not, what something fearful is not stressful anymore? Because by the repetition of a stimulus, for example, if you pair, like the authors do in this paper, they present to the people pictures of a house or a face, and they pair it with an electric shock. So after a couple of pairings, the person learns that when they see these pictures, so they need to be afraid because the electric shock is coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then a way of extinguishing this fear is by presenting only the picture of the face or of the house without the electric shock. So after several presentations of these pictures, the person learns that this stimulus is not fearful anymore. So, and basically, oxytocin in this study that has been given intranasally, it's an important advancement because we need drugs that can be given jointly with psychotherapy to enhance the effectiveness of therapies. Currently, there are not that many things that can be given to increase the psychotherapy to treat anxiety disorders such as PTSD. And oxytocin may be important to enhance this fear extinction learning and treat, for example, post-traumatic stress disorder.
And is it true that the drug, and we're a long way from it being administered to people, would have to be given shortly after the traumatic experience, or could it effectively be given years after?
Yeah, there are two ways that this hormone could be given to people to treat brain disorders, and specifically PTSD. One would be shortly after trauma. We know that shortly after trauma exposure, there is gene activation. We know this because of studies in animals. There is gene activation and protein synthesis in the brain that leads to the memory formation, to the fear memory formation. The good thing of this is that we can block these processes, these molecular processes, with drugs, and we can prevent the formation of this fearful memories. So we can prevent, in animals, we can prevent the PTSD-like symptoms. Of course, an animal, we don't know if an animal has PTSD, but there animals can have some symptoms, and we can prevent them. So oxytocin could be given shortly after trauma. And actually, there is a research group in Netherlands giving oxytocin within the first week after trauma. And they're studying if it can decrease the likelihood of having PTSD.
Oh.
And the second option would be to give oxytocin years after the person had the trauma and has the PTSD diagnosed, which is by enhancing fear extinction that I explained it before,
right,
which is like learning that the stimulus is not fearful anymore and helped by this drug.
Mm-hmm. And is the oxytocin, could it be habit forming in any way?
Sorry, say again. Habit for you.
Oxytocin. Is it something that could be harmful to the person in any way? Is it something that could happen? Yeah.
Yeah, the dose is important. And very high doses can have side effects, like alter the heart rate, and so it needs to be very well controlled, and it's not something like one person can take by itself and just say, well, I'm going to treat myself. It needs to be very well controlled, and yes, this can have some side effects, yeah.
Mm-hmm. When you talked about the fear extinction, you talked about a house and a face. If you're doing fear extinction to get rid of a fear of being in another car crash or some other traumatic event, do you have to have your fear extinction based on what the trauma was?
Yes. Generally, the therapy focuses on stimulus, on memories related to the original trauma, and just to pair it usually with techniques and respiration, or also meditation can be used, and to learn that these stimulus, these memories are not fearful. But yeah, that's how therapy works usually.
And how far would you say we are from being able to give recommendations for clinical use of oxytocin?
Not very close, to be honest. Also because we need more studies. For example, in this study you were talking, oxytocin has some limitations. It has only been given to men. We don't know what's going to happen on the fear response if it's given to women. And also because the individuals in this study are healthy individuals. And the brain and the fear network, the neurons related to fear in a person that has, for example, post-traumatic stress disorder, it's quite different than a person that doesn't have the disease. So because it works in a healthy individual, it doesn't mean it needs to work in somebody that has PTSD. But I believe that in the next years and with more studies, it could be possible that oxytocin could be given to enhance fear extinction with psychotherapy.
Mm. And let's talk more about this specific BDNF gene variant that you've been studying. And tell me about the work you're doing with mice. You call them shy mice. The carriers, you say, are literal wallflowers.
Well, I think that was bred from Scientific American, from the piece of the article that he wrote, that he wanted to call more that shy mice. But basically, how we evaluate fear in mice is we record with a video camera how much the mice freeze. Freezing is a response that the animals, the rodents do when they're afraid, which is the absence of movement. And it's how we know that an animal has fear. And my research has been focused on two things: how we can prevent PTSD shortly after trauma, and how can we, once the PTSD is diagnosed, how it can be treated. And in this case, as you suggested, BDNF, it's a protein that is related to memory. It's necessary for formation of new memories. It's a protein that helps neurotransmitters to work in the brain. Neurotransmitters are these small molecules that the neurons use to communicate between themselves, and BDNF gives support. And it's a support so important that without BDNF, lots of these processes cannot happen. And that also happens for fear memories. And what I've been finding in the last years is that we would like to have BDNF itself to be given for enhancing fear extinction. But because it's a protein and proteins cannot cross the blood-brain barrier, the blood-brain barrier is a barrier around the brain that protects it from some substances. And if you give BDNF, for example, in a pill or with an injection, it won't cross that barrier to protect the brain from substances outside the brain.
I see.
So what we used was a molecule similar to BDNF. It had the same action, but it could cross the blood-brain barrier. And we did these studies in mice. And what we saw is that by giving this similar molecule to BDNF, fear extinction was enhanced, and the effect was very profound. It's one of the most important effects enhancing extinction I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. And how did you do that? You gave it through a shot of some kind, and you only did it once, and it did the trick, or long-term therapy?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, only once. Just an injection in the mice, and it was enough to enhance fear extinction. And it's quite a powerful effect, and we didn't detect any side effects on the tests we're doing, but of course, this animal studies, and we don't know if, and I don't think nobody is giving this molecule now to humans, but we would need to test if this molecule is safe in humans first,
right,
and then if it's also effective. But what this study tells you is in animals is that there are molecules that will be given in the future that will be very powerful to enhance fear extinction.
And how will you test whether or not it's safe in humans, Raul?
Yeah, so then you need to go to clinical trials and see, well, if there are alterations on other hormones to see if people can function well. And, well, there are lots of variables that need to be addressed and needs to be FDA approved. And it's quite a complicated process, very long as it needs to be. And, it just feels far.
We're going to welcome phone calls for our guest. It's fascinating, isn't it? So many people suffer from PTSD or from what you may deem to be an irrational fear, or it can be an entirely rational, depending on how serious the horrible incident was that befell you. And the article that we have been talking about deals with a couple studies. Raul just talked about his and how it pretty miraculously, he's working with mice, this BDNF gene variant, with a shot of this gene variant, fear was able to be eliminated pretty immediately. It's a long way, of course, going from mice to human beings. But that, in addition to the studies that are being done with oxytocin, which has been administered into the noses of 62 men in hopes that their fear would go away, and for the most part it did. It looks as though there are promising developments here that may be something that everybody can take along with therapy in the not-too-distant future. Here's our phone number for Raul Andero-Galli. He's a postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Emory University, and he's doing research on animal models of post-traumatic stress disorder and emotional learning. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and you can also find us on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Lines are open for you at this very moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, we'll be joined by a young Native American activist who's using spoken word and rap music to give others an understanding of what it's like to be a Native American in a world that still accepts the term Redskins as an NFL mascot. All right, our phone number is 800-486-8655, and we'll be with your calls momentarily. We have Barbara from Dubuque sending an email, Raul, asking, in terms of sexual assault that happened to a victim many years ago, what kind of therapy do you suggest would go along with the use of the drug that you're talking about?
Well, the therapies we're talking here are all experimental, and of course, I cannot recommend it. This is very controlled trials and for specific cases. So I could really not recommend anything of this because it hasn't been tested. What I recommend, of course, is it's going to the psychiatrist and psychologist and being treated for that trauma and for that PTSD. And we know that I haven't spoken about this, but we know that there is a drug which is called D-cycloserine, which is an antibiotic that also happens to have properties enhancing fear extinction. And some researchers are giving it, and it can be given with therapy for some clinicians that are qualified to give it. And besides that, there are also antidepressants that are given for fear disorders and anxiolytics. But what is clear for the rate of success of these therapies is that more research is needed. And we need to find more specific drugs that target fear of extinction.
And could you tell me again the name of the antibiotic?
It's called D-cycloserine.
Cycloserine.
Yes.
Okay. Let's go to phone calls. James is calling from Merton. Hi, James.
Hello.
Hi.
Hey, James.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Go ahead, James.
Okay. I have a question about my condition. I'm a nurse, an RN of 30 years. I've worked in psychiatric admission unit for the Department of Corrections in Michigan. And I have encountered many violent patients and have done a good body of work over the years in helping people recover. My situation is that I was assaulted and I was beat up pretty badly by an inmate who I was administering medication to, a shot, and he was, long story short, he assaulted me, and the officers were out of the cell at the time, which was not good for me. And I just wonder if I'm not recovering, and it's been about 4 years since it happened. I've been in therapy at the University of Michigan, and they were helpful. But I continue to have dreams that are horrific at night. And the dreams are not just of the assault that culminated in my being on Social Security disability. I had a neck surgery and a number of other surgeries.
Oh, goodness. Mm.
And now I'm being treated currently for PTSD twice a week. I see a therapist. And I have not gotten better. I just continue to have horrific dreams at night about incidents that have occurred over the period of the 30 years. And I'm wondering if it's a cumulative effect, the PTSD, in your opinion. And I want to know what else I can do. I rewrite the dreams when I wake up in the middle of the night. That's something that I learned at Michigan, University of Michigan. And that is somewhat helpful. But I still have fear of going out in public, and I feel like someone's going to hit me from behind. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I've never experienced in my entire life. Mm-hmm. I've been a really fairly brave person, and now I'm not. And I just wonder what... I'm in Wisconsin now, and I'm wanting to get treatment here. I just moved here within the last month. Can you suggest a path that I could take to help my condition?
To get better. Raul, can you help him get better?
What I would recommend first is to stick to the treatment. I don't know exactly in your area which would be the best specialist to go, but I really recommend to stick to the treatment and fight hard, because, as you said, it's something uncontrollable. That the flashbacks you were describing, like these images of fearful situations that came through lots of years. So it's very uncontrollable, and that's why we need more research to understand more what's going on. Unfortunately, the current treatments sometimes need a long time to work. And also, the question you asked, James, is the accumulation of traumatic experiences during the last 30 years. Yet, it's important that the intensity of the trauma can be related to the intensity of post-traumatic stress disorder. So yeah, it's something that it could be related. And yeah, and that's all I can say.
You mentioned earlier this use of an antibiotic. Would that be something that James should be considering as he continues with psychotherapy or not?
Well, the clinician should, the psychiatrist should decide that. I mean, his psychiatrist. I couldn't really recommend him, but it's something that it, in some patients works. So maybe he can talk to his psychiatrist and ask him if he thinks that works and it can be given to him. But, yeah, it could be a possibility.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure it would be helpful to have a list of places, and maybe somebody will contact us that deal with post-traumatic stress disorder in Wisconsin. He's in Merton, so in that area, somebody who has specialized in post-traumatic stress disorder, you need that kind of recommendation, I think. Sometimes you have to click with just the right person. And I hope you get better, James. That's hard. It's a hard way to live, and the work you did was important and also very hard. Raul Andero Gali is our guest. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. I'll put you on hold, James, and maybe if we can get contact information for you. If somebody gets a hold of us and can recommend treatment for you in your area, we'll be happy to pass that along to you. So Cynthia, I think, is listening, and we'll get your contact information for us. I'm wondering if there's, I just want to know a little bit more about our memories. I'm wondering how many, if something really happy happens to us or something very exciting, are those memories as prominent as those that are terribly tragic that are in our minds? Are they front and center? Can they become front and center? Can we replace the traumatic with the incredibly happy? Are they there?
Well, now you say this about replacing memories. There's recent studies in mice showing that they can actually, memories can be replaced by using complicated genetical approaches, by placing a mouse in a chamber and deliver an electric shock. We know the neurons that are activated. And then by giving the animal a pleasurable experience, and we can see which neurons are activated, and then we can switch, and then we can make, like, when the animal enters in the chamber that experienced electric shock, the neurons that activated during the pleasurable experience ride the behavior instead of the fearful neurons. However, this is in mice, and this is very recent experiment, but this suggests that in the future, that therapies might use this knowledge to substitute these memories, these fearful memories, with good memories. And something I would like to highlight is about the question of the program, that is, can fear be erased? So basically, a memory cannot really be erased. What we can learn is make a new learning, and this memory will always be there, but it will have a different interpretation. We can learn that it's not as stressful or fearful, and also it could be associated with a positive reinforcer, and then it couldn't be that traumatic as it was before.
Jackie is our next caller in Appleton. Hi, Jackie.
Hi.
Hi.
I guess I just wanted to bring up the age-old question of this: is this really natural? I'm a former military wife myself, and I feel as if I've been surrounded by enough PTSD in my military experience or military-like experience. And I, from my personal limited experience, I feel as if the best way for this specific type of PTSD related to military experiences that I've seen people come through and get through to the other side on a more positive level is if they get together and they discuss their experiences with one another versus medicating. Does he have anything to say about that, I suppose?
I'm sure he does.
Yeah. Hi, Jackie. So, yeah, I fully agree with you that sticking together and social support is key. to prevent PTSD, and also talking about the experience and in a controlled way, and with a therapy that can lead that process. And I think I'm a psychologist myself, and I believe that behavioral therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy are extremely helpful. But being said that, there could be drugs that could even improve. They could even help more than the behavioral therapies. And my main specialty is drugs. But yeah, I fully agree. And what I feel in the future, it will be a combination of therapy, behavioral therapy, plus a drug. I think it's what it would be the most effective.
And how long away is the future for the drugs?
Well, a drug to be given to a person in a clinical setting needs to be approved by the FDA, and so far there are no specific drugs that haven't passed that FDA control besides D-cycloserine and maybe a couple others, but there are not like that many things we can give, and so we are a little far, maybe 5-10 years to have in a clinical setting a drug that can be routinely given, and we know that they really work and they're extremely effective. There are some drugs that are partially effective, but yeah, we still need some more years.
I see. Thank you, Jackie, very much. Thank you. Thank you very much for your call. Alex in La Crosse is next. Hi, Alex.
Hi, I'm just wondering if your guest could speak to the issue of compassion fatigue and treatment for it for people who work in frontline trauma situations as a career.
Well, compassion fatigue, it's not my specialization. I wouldn't really know what to recommend because my expertise is more related to future treatments of fear. But, yeah, I believe it's something completely necessary, but I'm sorry, I don't know what to say.
We had somebody write us an email who wants to know if PTSD can become a cumulative problem, as in the more times you're assaulted, the stronger the post-traumatic stress disorder. Is there truth to that?
It could be possible. As anything in life, the sooner you solve the problem, the better. And so what can be happening with PTSD is that every time you remember the traumatic situation, you are reconsolidating that memory. It's what we call the scientists' reconsolidation process, in which the memory is again encoded into your fear network. So the more times you do this process, the stronger the fear memory it gets. So this is why it's better to look for help as soon as possible when somebody feels that needs help.
And I'm not sure I understood, Raul, when you talked about genetic variants here. So we have specific genes that are inherited that are more susceptible to fear, or what did you mean by gene variant?
Yeah, gene variant. So, so we'll have gene variants in which we'll have the same genes, but they are expressed in a different way. So, and basically, what happens is that some people has in the DNA. Has a slightly different nucleotide for the gene of interest. So, for example, the nucleotides are like the T, A, C, G of the DNA. And what happens is like some people having a slightly different version of the gene is more susceptible to some diseases. And by knowing this, it can help us to know how a treatment is going to work in that person. It can help us to diagnose psychiatric diseases, but still, it's not really like something that we can say in stone. Like, we cannot say if a person has this gene variant, he's going to have that disease. No, it's not. Why? Well, because things are more complex. As I said, that's around 30 to 40%. And also the environment, as Jackie was talking about. And because also if somebody starts doing therapy soon, it can help to overcome this fear. So, as I said, genetic variants are important, but they are not everything.
We welcome more phone calls, and our guest is Dr. Raul Andero-Galli. He's a postdoctoral fellow in the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at the Yerkes National Primate Research Center at Emory University. And we're looking at this latest research. Drugs are not on the market yet. We're quite a ways from that. But research would suggest that hormone and gene therapies, along with psychotherapy, can treat anxiety and PTSD. And we're welcoming phone calls. Most of them have been from people who have been experiencing PTSD or taking care of people who experience that and how it's manifesting itself and what might be best in their particular situations. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number for Dr. Raul Andero-Galli, 800-486-8655. And Mardi in Douglas County is next. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. That first call was heartbreaking.
Yes.
There's a therapy technique. It's EMDR, E-M-D as in David R. I'm a little fuzzy on what that stands for, eye movement, I think desensitization and something that has been very effective for people with post-traumatic stress disorder. And I wonder what your guest thinks of that, if he has any experience with that kind of therapy and its effectiveness.
Yeah. I've never done it because, as I said, I mainly work with how the future therapies are going to be. And, yeah, and the eye movement, desensitization, and reprocessing EMDR, as you suggested, is a psychotherapy that, yeah, that has shown that it can have a good success for PTSD. So, but it goes beyond my specialty, and but, yeah, I think it could be interesting to combine with drugs to treat PTSD.
And do you know, we were trying to find help from that caller who gave that heartbreaking story. Would that be something that would be available, Mardi, in Wisconsin?
Sorry, could you repeat?
No, I was just wondering, Mardi is gone. I was just wondering if that kind of, we were just trying to find help for the person who called earlier, if that might be something that was widely available or if it's a specialty that's not practiced very often in very many places. Do you know?
I think it's quite frequent. I think in almost any area you could find somebody doing EMDR, yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Mardi, for the call. Paul sends this email. Have you or others observed variations in relevant genetic expression within this generic subtype? If so, are there any observed or measured correlations to environment or experience?
So I understand if the genes are related to environment or experience in relationship to PTSD.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, well, in both cases, it's related to both. Gene variations have been related to susceptibility to disease and also to how a person with a gene variation reacts on a specific treatment. So overall, what is important is to have a holistic approach and study the most things we can. The genes, the environment of the person, study that using psychotherapy, using drugs, and basically, there are lots of interactions between lots of these things we're talking. And, yes, genes a part of it, and but not all. Also, the environment is very important as well. Yeah.
A caller wonders if animal therapy is an effective therapy for PTSD.
There are some reports showing that it could be helpful. I don't think alone it would be ideal, but in combination with other therapies, and yeah, it could be helpful. It brings compassion and love for the animal, and it helps to some people. Also, for people with autism, for example, there has been shown in some papers that it may help to have interactions with animals, and yeah, it could be something that could be very helpful.
And let's go to Pam in Madison next. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Two things. One, EMDR is practiced by a lot of psychologists in the UW health system in Madison.
Great.
And two is that there's nothing post about post-traumatic stress syndrome. Every time you flashback, it's as if it is real and in the moment in your body. It's really a misnomer to consider it post.
What should we call it?
It's
traumatic stress. Yeah, traumatic stress disorder. That makes sense,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it makes sense. Also, there's some people that saying that it shouldn't be called a disorder. It should be post-traumatic stress. And we can discuss about the name, but yeah. I agree with you. When the flashback comes, it's very real, and it's not anything post. Yeah.
Thank you, Pam, for the information that will be of help to our earlier caller. This article that we caught our attention in this show, and I think that you were quoted as saying this, PTSD is a unique psychiatric disease because we usually know when it begins. We could potentially give drugs shortly after trauma to prevent it. What about those cases where we don't know when it begins? Something that may have happened to us in childhood that's in our memory, but we can't quite get to it.
Yeah, actually, there are studies in animals that show what you're suggesting, that somebody can have, in animals would be like PTSD-like symptoms, even without remembering the trauma. So we can have trauma even without remembering the traumatic event. And yes, there are some cases that we don't know when the trauma it was, but sometimes we know when it starts with the car accident or the combat exposure. And the reason I say it this way is because we have the advantage that we can act shortly after it happened. And in the recent paper I published in Iran, we show a new pathway when using the neurokinin 3 receptor, which is a receptor in the brain located in the emotional areas in the brain, that in mice, by giving a drug that acts on this NK3 receptor, blocked the development of PTSD-like symptoms. So although this is in mice and it's not something you can give to humans, yeah, it's important that to know when the trauma starts for studying it. But yes, it can only be present without remembering when that happened.
Mm-hmm. Lori in Minnesota. Hi, Lori. Hi, Lori. I don't know where Lori is, but Lori wanted to talk about PTSD in people who have been bullied. Is it prevalent? Do you know?
Yes, it can be prevalent. It's a way of chronic stress that it can lead to PTSD. I wouldn't know about the specifics because I don't treat patients. But, yeah, if somebody feels that has been bullied and has some symptoms like flashbacks while is sleeping, sometimes feels fear while in a safe environment, has a lot of anxiety related to that, and really feels and needs help, from here, what I strongly suggest is to look for help because it can be treated, and you can get a lot of help with a good specialist.
An email from Steve in Madison. If a child is raised from prenatal development in a chaotic, fear-inducing environment, then born into a home of no stability, no security, and responsible adults, how is that child trained to respond to all future life events? Can that original training to heightened oxytocin response be corrected later in childhood or later in life? And is a child so raised condemned to respond fearfully and incorrectly to all future stimuli?
Well, it could help in the oxytocin in a clinical setting, although it would need to be studied. But by this chaotic and environment, where children are raised, it could influence in the future, in the adulthood, to have anxiety disorders. But it doesn't need to happen. Not everybody that is exposed to this chaotic environment and develop an anxiety disorder with altered fear learning, like post-traumatic stress disorder. But yeah, in the case that somebody in adulthood or even during the teenage period developed anxiety disorders, it potentially oxytocin could be used for correcting some of these problems. Although, as I said before, lots of more research are needed. We need to know if oxytocin works in people that has psychiatric diseases, and we still are a little far from there, but it's encouraging.
And I was wondering about the part of our brain where all our memories are. And you get to be a certain age, and you think about the millions or billions of memories you must have. Which ones stay with us? What has to happen in our life for that memory to be pulled up at virtually any time, whereas all the books we may have read when we were in high school have disappeared somewhere into the back recesses of our brains?
Mm-hmm. So memories are stored in networks. In networks, it means connections of neurons. And so, as you said, like a book you read many years ago, you might remember some of it, because there is still some of it in the connection of your neurons. And where is that? So depending on the kind of memory we're talking, they can be located in different places of the brain. But basically what is considered, and it is generally assumed, that the memories are generally stored in the cortex area, which is the most external part of the brain, whereas other parts of the brain, like, for example, the amygdala, which is a key area for fear, regulates these emotions and kind of distributes where this memory is going. It's kind of the organizer. If you want to put an analogy, it's like kind of the director of where the memory is going. Where the amygdala knows where that fear memory is stored. What drawer is that in the brain, and can bring it back. So, in the fear network, the amygdala is also very, very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Well, it's been a fascinating conversation, and I hope that the treatments will be around sooner than 5 to 10 years from now, that your
research
will bear fruit before then. Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Ghali.
Thank you, Kathleen. I'm very happy to be on your show. And thank you so much for inviting me again.
Yes, you're entirely welcome. Thanks. Dr. Rahul Andero Ghali, our guest, and he is at the Department of Psychiatry and Behavioral Sciences at Yerkes National Primate Research Center at Emory University. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing the hour and to Cynthia Schuster for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. Tomorrow on our show, the 1 o'clock hour, Dr. Michael Mann, director of the Penn State Earth Science Center and one of the leading scientists who contributes to our scientific understanding of climate change, will join us to talk about the news that 2014 was the warmest on record. And then during this hour tomorrow, a young Native American activist who's using spoken word and rap music to give others an understanding of what it's like to be a Native American in a world that still accepts the term Redskins as an NFL mascot. those shows coming up tomorrow. Great conversations ahead on the Ideas Network.